Thank you, Rabbi. I'm very honored and grateful that the family asked me to speak in memory of their beloved Uncle Ike. I know that in doing so, I'm really just a stand-in for them and for Ike's dear cousin, who was my father-in-law, David and Alan. Dave and Ike shared a very special relationship. As the older cousin, Ike was a big brother to Dave. He took him under his wing in the formative years, guided him in many ways that would benefit Dave for the rest of his life. Ike was there when, in the heart of the Depression, David needed a pair of track shoes so he could compete for Garfield and Hunter Red Dash. He couldn't afford his track shoes. Ike was there to provide them. Dave was the lucky recipient of Ike's hand-me-down ski clothes and skis and the wore to the slopes. But their bond was much deeper than those simple material things. In some ways, Ike was the older brother that Dave never had, and maybe Dave was the younger brother that Ike never had. My mother-in-law, Beth, thank God is here with us, fondly recalls that Dave had a very, very close relationship with all of his cousins, but Ike was something special to both of them. When they arrived back in Seattle after World War II, as newlyweds, it was Ike who was waiting at the train station and drove them in his convertible to meet the relatives, many of the relatives that Beth had never met before. It was Ike who was there for them all through their marriage, in good times and bad, with generosity, a spirit, and a kindness that both she and Dave treasured, and that she recalled for me as we spoke the other day. Dave told me many times about how Ike and his brothers quietly adopted the traits of generosity and community spirit from their father, Eugene. He was a successful business owner, and he employed many, many friends and relatives. But he was also the source of financial aid in the days before there were credit cards or easy loans. People who were down on their luck and had nowhere else to turn turned to the scene, and he turned no one away. He took paper IOUs, I think more for the dignity of the borrower, and put them in a cigar box. When the scene passed away, the three brothers took the three cigar boxes. Ike and his brothers never opened them. They took them down to the waterfront, and they dumped them through the slats into the bay. Ike confirmed to me that story was true. He said they didn't want to know the names of the people in the cigar box because he knew their father never intended to collect those IOUs. Ike, as you know, was never much for storytelling, especially when it came to bragging or talking about himself. When I visited him, I was generally there to ask for something on behalf of the synagogue. He made my job really easy. He got to yes before I could finish asking. He told me that supporting Ezra Becerra was his way of honoring the memory of his parents and grandparents. And he did that in fine fashion to the end, never accepting any offers for personal recognition. Many times, they wanted to make him the honoree at the synagogue for an event. He never allowed it. He gave to the best of his ability with no ulterior motive. At the synagogue, Ike and my father-in-law frequently sat side by side in the same row that Ike and his family occupied from the time that the sanctuary was built, along with Al Franco and John Franco, and in later years, with his nephew Alan and me beside him, Louis Cohen and Joseph L. Haddock right behind. These were the shared moments that brought a big smile to Ike's face. He was so grateful to be there among his lifelong friends, honoring the traditions of his parents in the best way that he could. On one visit to his apartment at the summit, he showed me some photographs and memorabilia from the war. Now, he was training to become a B-17 pilot down there in Tacoma. And there was an accident on the tarmac. Another pilot in training had misjudged the distance, and their planes collided violently. His plane was shaken so much that the steering wheel came off in his hand. And he managed to bring his plane to a stop. And with his hands shaking, holding this dislodged steering wheel, he noticed there was a little piece of paper in the subject of the steering column. So he was curious and took it out, and it was the name and telephone number of a young woman who had worked on the assembly plant and in making that B-17 at the Boeing plant in Seattle. And she didn't know if anybody would ever see that, but she just learned all over it. So he said he was intrigued and gave her a call. And he said they actually met for a cup of coffee before he shipped out for England. He just smiled and said she was nice, but I never spoke to her again. He had a wry smile on his face, and that day was something special. And that's the way I'm going to choose to remember him, with that smile on his face, youthful and happy in those moments. How else would you describe him? Charming, engaging, generous, humble, and warm. He was a gentleman in every way, caring and loving to his family and friends, always thinking of others before thinking of himself. He is a role model for every one of us in so many ways. Thank you for allowing me to share these brief memories with you. ICAL Habit's memory will be a lasting blessing to his beloved nephews and nieces, their children and grandchildren, and for our entire community. May rest in peace.